Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are live. We can take your emails about what we're about to talk about here, which is a wildfire database at jx@jeffnet.org. We've gotten to the point where wildfires are so large, news organizations have stopped giving size estimates by acreage and started giving them by square miles, like the Park Fire north of Chico, now more than 600 square miles, about half the size of Rhode Island. Resource and fire managers are looking for any edge in fighting fires. There is a database that's been in existence for more than a decade, cataloging many fires and some important information about them. Oregon State University researchers participated in an infusion of new data into the database, including information about people and ecosystems, data beyond how the fire started and how big it got. Erica Fleischman was part of the team at OSU. Erica Fleischman is the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute and professor in the College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences at OSU. Dr. Fleischman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So talk about the repository for the data. Can you give us a short history of the Fire Program Analysis Fire Occurrence Database? I assume you call it FPAFOD or something?
Yeah, it is a mouthful. This is a terrific database that has been maintained by Karen Short at the USDA Forest Service for more than a decade, as you said. The database includes information on more than 2 million fires in the United States from 1992 to 2020. And that database that Karen has maintained includes information on when the ignition was discovered, on the cause of the ignition, if known, on the final size of the wildfire, and a number of other details that are related to the ignition.
Which sounds like useful information. So how is it used currently? How is the, before the infusion of the new stuff, how was the database used?
It has been used in, I am guessing, this is probably an underestimate, dozens of research efforts that have been applied to practice to track where wildfires are occurring, what the seasonality is, where wildfires of different causes are occurring. So, for example, those data have given researchers and wildland fire managers a lot of insight into when wildfires of different causes are most likely. So, for example, not surprising, but it's easy to say it's not surprising once you've actually seen the information. There's a tremendous spike in the number of wildfires ignited by fireworks use right around the 4th of July. And when you see something like that, you can say, wow, there is such an increase that it suggests that being careful with respect to fireworks use at particular times of the year could really make a big difference in terms of public safety.
But that's a good example of ways in which you found that information about people and their activities can be useful. So it sounds like what happened was this team you were part of, it was Boise State and Oregon State?
It was led by Boise State. It was led by Yavar Pourmohamed, who's a PhD student at Boise State University. He's in Moji Sadek's lab, and so they really led the work. But it was a terrific team of people working on this, people at multiple universities in multiple states, people working with the USDA Forest Service, with the National Weather Service, and also with the United Nations. So this is a terrific partnership that resulted in the augmentation of the database.
So the initial starting point when Yavar Pourmohamed suggested going this way, I mean, there was some sense that there was information lacking from the database, I assume.
Well, I wouldn't say that it was information that was lacking, but that adding additional types of information could really increase the information that could be obtained from the database. That could really make it, especially as computing power increases by quite a bit virtually every year, could make it a lot more feasible to understand what's been observed in wildfire patterns in the past. What are the characteristics of populations that are disproportionately exposed to wildfires, and then to use the information to try to anticipate when and where wildfires of different causes might be most likely in the future, given various scenarios of environmental change and demographic change.
We're talking about adding information to a database about wildfires in the United States. 2 million fires cataloged since 1992. You're hearing from Erica Fleischman, the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute at Oregon State University and a professor there. And we're talking about updating the Fire Program Analysis Fire Occurrence Database. You can, if you're really into the numbers, you can read this whole thing yourself online. We do provide links to it at our website at jeffexchange.org. And you can take part in the conversation with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So once you begin to consider opening that door and say, well, let's include more information. I mean, what kinds of information did the team think would be most useful?
We added information in four major categories. One of those categories was weather and climate. So looking at what was happening right around the time of the ignition and also looking at what was happening in the preceding seasons. So for example, wildfires in a particular summer, did they follow a wet winter, a dry winter, a hot spring? What were those types of patterns? The second category that we added information in was vegetation and topography. So we have information, for example, on non-native annual grasses, which are highly flammable in much of the West, information on topography, which can really affect the feasibility of suppressing wildfires and the extent to which wind can, for example, carry wildfires down a steep slope. We added information on social and economic factors that primarily came from groups like the U.S. Census Bureau and some national and global sources on things like income levels. And then we added information on what we referred to as administrative variables, so things like distance from roads, things like what was the national wildfire preparedness level at the time the wildfire was discovered.
That's all. So you get a whole lot more context then with each of these fires. And were you able to map all each of the 2 million fires with that information?
Well, the fires already could be mapped. So the database that the Forest Service has maintained, the Fire Program Analysis Fire Occurrence Database, has the location of each ignition. And that's really powerful because it means that one can take any other type of what we call spatially referenced information. So basically information that's tied to locations on the ground, and then use that to augment the data that were already available on the fire locations. But yeah, that provided a means to say what types of information that might be relevant to wildfire preparedness and recovery are available across the United States. And now it becomes relatively straightforward to augment the database. And it also becomes pretty straightforward. You know, some things don't change very much, at least over human lifetime. So topography doesn't change very much. But there are differences in demography that are tracked on a fairly regular basis. There are differences in vegetation. And so the database can be updated fairly easily over time as information on new wildfires is added to the fundamental database. All of the ancillary information also can be kept updated.
So it sounds like each of the fires then potentially gets a bit more backstory than they had before. You know more of the context of where, when, how,
exactly,
and what led up to this.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So then talk about that third category, the social and economic stuff, and how that can help in understanding wildfire starts and fire behavior.
Yeah, it can help in a number of ways. It can help with respect to different levels of preparedness for wildfires. So that might relate to, for example, what is the population density in a particular location? What is access to healthcare services? What are some of the dominant languages in a particular area? So it can help target prevention efforts to the attributes of different populations where wildfires tend to start at particular times of the year or from different causes. So sometimes you'll see discrepancies, for example, in where wildfires from debris burning are most likely. And you might think about something like, well, what's the proximity to municipal trash services or something like that? So there can be a lot of effort with respect to preparedness and trying to target preparedness efforts. And then thinking about what are the resources in a particular location that would allow people, if there's a wildfire in the area, to spring back. So what are the financial resources that are available locally? Again, what are some of the social support services that are available in a particular area? So it can really help to make the preparation more, enable more people to participate in preparation and to be prepared, and then enable more communities to hopefully bounce back if there's a wildfire in their area.
So it's less about things like humidity and height of dry grass and things like that, but about people and about their behaviors around that time. And it sounds like also greatly about getting information to them in advance of conditions that can lead to these kinds of fires.
It's all of those things. So it's being able to understand the circumstances under which wildfires might be most likely, all else being equal, and also to understand, just as you said, helping people as much as possible and equalizing where the resources are provided.
Erica Fleischman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute and professor of the College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences at Oregon State University. Erica was part of a team that put a whole lot of new information into the Fire Program Analysis Fire Occurrence Database maintained by the U.S. Forest Service. So I know we have faster computers now. You acknowledged as much already, but this still sounds like a lot of work, sorting the tranches of information and deciding which should be added. I mean, how big a project? I mean, the team numbers, it looks like at least a dozen people. How long did this go on?
A lot of the work was conducted over about a year. A lot of the discussion from the full team was, what are the types of information that would be most relevant? It seems like, well, gosh, 270 attributes, that's a heck of a lot. Is there anything that you didn't add? Yes, there are a lot of other things that could have been added. So there was a lot of discussion about, of all of probably the thousands of variables that one could add, what are the ones that would be most informative, and what we sometimes say, what are the ones that are most actionable?
Karen Short, I guess, didn't put up a fight about this at the Forest Service.
It was terrific to be able to collaborate with her on this project.
So I've been asking about some of the reconsideration of fires that already happened. I mean, is there some value to future fires? We talked about getting information out to people, but is there some predictive ability you gain with adding the four categories of information you have put into the database?
Yeah, you do. You can much better understand the context in which wildfires have occurred in the past. And that enables you to say, well, given a particular set of environmental or demographic conditions in the future, can we say something about the likelihood of wildfires from different causes igniting in particular times of year, in particular locations, under particular sets of circumstances? So you can learn a lot from the past and use that to be able to have some expectations about what might happen in the future.
Not only do we have faster computers now, but we also have artificial intelligence. And I wonder if AI played any role in helping you gather the information or interpret the information or otherwise put the new stuff into the database.
Not as much for compiling the information, but various types of AI-based models have been around for decades, sometimes referred to as things like deep learning or machine learning. And those types of tools, especially with much faster computers and more computer memory, makes it possible to ask questions of the existing data at a deeper level, to be able to really harness the power of the information to understand what's happened in the past and what might happen in the future. So, for example, the same team at Boise State who led enhancement of the database has been looking at potential cause. So, of all of the wildfires that are in the database, the causes are missing or unknown for about 30% of those wildfires. And the team at Boise State and colleagues has been able to say, okay, given what the information that we have about wildfires of known causes, can we try to pin a cause on the wildfires that were uncertain why they started? And so that has been highly successful, for example.
Wow. So were there any, we have a couple seconds left here, but any real, ooh, look at that, moments as you put the information into the database and watched its relation with other bits of information?
I think it's exciting to us just in terms of the number of different types of questions that you can ask and the different types of context. So you can be asking questions that are relevant to public health. You can be asking questions relevant to vegetation management, to positioning resources. So everything in the database is public. All of the information about its compilation is public. And we're excited to put it out there and see what people will be able to do with it.
It's a big database. It is much bigger still after the work of these teams from Boise State, Oregon State, and other universities. Erica Fleischman is at Oregon State University, director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute and a professor there. Thank you so much for sharing this on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for today's exchange. JeffExchange.org is our website. All of our interviews end up there and on podcast sites. Angela Decker, JPR News, is our senior producer. Andrew Crackle's at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.